Welcome to the Work is Weird Now podcast. Whether you're nearing retirement, entering the workforce for the first time, or caught somewhere in the confusing muddle in the middle, you're likely sensing it and you're probably living it. We know we are, and we want to know why. Listen in as we interview experts and everyday people like you to find out how best to navigate the ever-growing weirdness of work in the modern age.
Welcome to the Work is Weird Now podcast. Today's guest is Toby Crosby, CEO and founder of Making Moves. Now, I've been connected with Toby for probably 5 or 6 years. We met at my previous life when I was at office design and build company Peldon Rose. And we did some marketing work and blog writing together during COVID times, I think it was. LinkedIn did that real, you know, beautiful thing that LinkedIn does, keep you connected to people that you've met over the years. And of late, I've noticed a shift in Toby's personal brand. And there's a real focus around very much dad first, CEO second, property leader third. And I really wanted to unpick that and learn more. So welcome, Toby.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're most welcome. So, as you know, we start every podcast with what is your weird work moment of the week? Alice, what is yours?
So mine is, as those of you who would have listened to it, we did an episode on AI and work last week. And, or actually, I guess now, by the time this comes out, it might be a few weeks ago. And what was interesting is I left that session thinking, why is nobody talking about this? Why isn't this the dominant topic of conversation in every discussion that I have? And then I realized that actually once I posted it on LinkedIn that there are a lot of people that are in fact talking about it, because now my feed has changed considerably. And so now I feel very much more plugged into the wider discussion, which is great. So yeah, that was a bit of a weird work moment for me, is that actually conversations I thought weren't happening are very much happening. So yeah. How about you, Dan?
Yeah, it's all about hacking the algorithm, I suppose. So now it's working in yours and AI's favor. Mine's about being ghosted in the workplace. Is it becoming a norm?
I think so.
Yeah. So it is just a funny old thing that's happening more frequently. And yeah, I'm just finding it weird. I'm like, is ghosting on Tinder now shifting to ghosting in the workplace? Maybe that's a whole episode in itself. Toby, what's yours?
Yeah. Mine relates to trying to have a meeting with my two business partners, and we've been trying for about 5 weeks, and we had one booked in for yesterday lunchtime, which then got cancelled because we couldn't all get together because something happened in the business. And that happened at about 7 a.m. I then dropped my daughter off at school, went to get the central line. The central line was absolutely busted. So my business partner phoned me and said, I'm in Wanstead. Do you want to come and meet for a coffee? So we ended up meeting in the sunshine, eating an omelette, having a coffee together. And then my other business partner phoned by video call randomly at that time. So we ended up having our business meeting in the sun in a coffee shop in Wanstead, totally ad hoc. So I got home last night and I was like, I've actually spoken to Anthony and Kian and didn't actually mean to. So it was a very weird start to the day.
And the second question for you, Toby, is, are you where you thought you'd be in your career right now?
No, probably exceeded, I would say. When I started this journey with Making Moves, it started originally as a bit of a lifestyle business, allowing me to exit a company that I kind of come to the end of the life with, and it was a chance for me to do my own thing. And then after about 6 months, you kind of realized that maybe you were onto something, maybe there was a market for what you were trying to achieve. And then a little bit of investment from a big deal that I was involved in gave me the cash to grow the business. And then to sit here today with 37 employees, multiple departments, and acting as a CEO is, yeah, certainly not where I expected to be. But it's been, yeah, one hell of a journey.
So what's been most surprising or unexpected to you about where you are today and being a CEO of a company of that size?
Yeah, I think it's just the learning journey. Learning how to operate in business, particularly at a strategic level, is a really different world to just doing a property deal. You know, being able to transact on a transaction in central London is great, really good fun, high intensity. You learn a lot about negotiation and about how to structure deals, but actually running a business, the skills I've learned in the last, say, 5 years, I can transfer into any kind of service business or any business really. Learning about how to manage people or grow people, grow a team, learning about P&Ls, balance sheets, accounting, and all the bits that I don't like, and also just being able to give you confidence to do different things with your business, and to kind of create that entrepreneurial spark to go, actually, yeah, I've done one business, so now I can do maybe another two or three, or four, I think is where I am right now. And also just looking at ideas outside of property, it's just like knowing how to go through that process to then allow you to start a business and go through that journey. And then it's just down to my appetite to do it. You know, do I have the energy? Do I have the funds? Do I have the motivation to go through that journey each time? So, yeah, it's the transferable skills is what I've probably learned the most.
And when did you set up Making Moves? How old is the company?
So it's 10 years this year. We were 10 years in January. It's every year's brought a new challenge, some good, some bad, but generally to sit here and say I own a 10-year-old business. I was actually chatting to this mentor and they were kind of saying like you should be really, really proud of that. Like, what are you doing to celebrate? And we've got things that we've got in the pipeline, but they're like, is that enough? Like, have you really actually sat down? Have you treated yourself? Have you done something with your business partners? Like, what are you doing with the team to like really emphasize the fact that you're 10 years old? What are we going to do to celebrate? The easy thing to do is do a massive party, invite loads of people, spend a load of money, and then at the end of it, go, was that really what I wanted? So we've actually looked at it, and this is driven by me. It's just like, what can we do that's a bit different? Because that's our kind of motto. And also, you know, I find if you have like those big events, you just don't really speak to anyone. You're not actually spending like good quality time. So we just had a trip to Barcelona, which was kind of like the team trip away. We've got another team party planned. And then we're looking at doing something with clients where we actually go and see the clients with a gift and say, thank you for using us over the last 10 years. So it's a bit more kind of intimate and a bit more memorable. I don't drink, so it's kind of like having this champagne-filled smash up. It's not really me. So I want that 10 years to reflect me and reflect my team.
Yeah, great. I mean, it's interesting because I actually set up my business about 12 years ago as well, so sort of similar time frame. And I definitely never take a minute to stop and celebrate because you're just so focused on staying alive, right? It feels just as much like that as it did in the beginning for me. Just going back to being a CEO then, what kind of CEO do you like to think of yourself as?
I would like to say a fair CEO. I always look at things from a fair point of view. Is it a fair decision to make? I'm very culture driven. I've always said that I wanted to create a great culture because I'm a believer that if you get the culture right, it leads to better profits, basically. My role has changed slightly over the past 12 months, which is more of an outward facing role. So that means more client facing, more interaction with the outside world. Whereas before it was very much focused on running the business, so day-to-day operations. So that role's changed slightly as well.
So how has that been for you? How has that experience of being more outward facing been?
Yeah, I love it. It was driven by me because I was getting into a bit of a hole where lots of HR issues, lots of really challenging financial, looking at P&Ls all the while, not being able to release a kind of creative entrepreneurial side of me. It was like dampening what I could do to the business. And probably from a mood perspective, reflecting on what I was saying to the rest of the business. Whereas now, you know, 12 months into it, it's a bit more like I've released my creative spirit. I've been able to launch a new business off the back of having the time to do it. And also it means that I get to do what I love best, which is seeing clients and meeting other business owners in our industry to discuss about what's going on, and just having that face of making moves out in the market. So it's been a really important change for us as a business, but also for me personally, it's been a bit of a weight off my shoulders, to be honest.
And how have you unlocked that gear change then? How have you done it for yourself? And then what has been the impact for the team around you? Because if you've let go of those things, that's obviously impacted others.
Yeah, no, definitely. We've actually, so our head of operations, Sally, was due for promotion, and we've been working with her on a career path for nearly 2 years, to get her to a point where we could release me and her become the managing director of the business. So that happened in tandem with me transitioning into my role. And Sally loves that kind of day-to-day running of the business. It wasn't just like, I don't want to do it. Here you go, you can do it. It was very much like she wanted to do that type of role. So it's just been us still working together actually quite a lot, but also just making sure those roles are really clearly defined so that people in the business are very clear. If it's a day-to-day issue, they go to Sally. If it's a wider, we've got this new idea, or Toby, can you be on a podcast, or whatever it might be, that kind of goes into my direction. So, and I actually think it's given the business more structure to be able to do the things we want to do.
Sounds great. I think I need a Sally in my life.
Yeah, I mean, you can't have Sally. But,
Sally, if you're listening.
But there are plenty of people out there that like that type of role, and I think you can fight against it and say, well, I can do it if I want to. But actually, if you're not built to take on a role like that, it's not a thing I would recommend doing.
It's so interesting to hear you say that. So when I took this leap of faith into my own business, a company down here let me work out of their office just so I could go and be in like a hub, you know, so you're not isolated on your own. And the two founders there, they're very yin and yang, but they both have what each other don't. Observing that, you've got to know what your strengths and your weaknesses are. And I think it's really good self-reflection, right? Knowing what you can and can't do.
Yeah. And also it removes a little bit of your ego. Because I think of the most like crazy ideas sometimes, and I'll come in on the Monday and I'll be like, I've got this incredible idea, and Sally will be like, yeah, but you know, is that actually really going to work? And you're like, okay, yeah, okay, all right, I'll go back in my box. But then off the back of that, you also get the one spark where they're all like, actually, yeah.
This sounds very much like my marriage. Me saying to my husband, let's buy a holiday. We can't do that. So, but I think there's a good lesson there, like putting it in their language, right? Like, here's the business case for it.
She won't mind me saying, but I call my wife the anchor, because she very much, like, again, I do it in my personal life, and I was like, let's do this. Holiday home has come up, and she's like, Toby, just hang on a second. Like, you've got loads on at work. I'm really busy. How are we going to go and do this? Like, how is that actually going to happen? You're like, okay, yeah, I'll go back. So, yeah.
Chris calls me the war office.
Okay. Yeah.
There's a backhanded compliment in there somewhere.
So, speaking of your personal life, I understand that with this new outward facing profile that you've got, you've been speaking a lot more about things like fatherhood. And sort of mental health and things like that. So it'd be great to hear why you chose these topics and where you want to go with them.
Yeah, so the parent one comes from, I'm going to say pain, because it has been a tough journey. My daughter's 5, my son is 2. And that journey that you go through in this kind of like toddler period, like no one tells you about what it's like. And I said to my wife a few years ago, I was like, when they're a bit older and we've got a bit more time, I just really want to write a book about this period, because everyone knows in the first 6 months you don't sleep. So people tell you that and you're like, yeah, okay, I know that. And you always get the person come in and they say, oh, I've got this incredible baby. Like they sleep all the time. And in the back of your mind, you're like, just wait 3 months and then you'll realize that they don't. And then they come back and they're, you know, really tired and they go, oh, you know, they're not sleeping. And then the assumption is after that first 6 to 12 months that everything's going to be great and you're sleeping and it's all going to be fine. But the reality is that it actually gets even harder as they start to walk and they start to talk and they start school and they go through all this like tantrumy emotional journey. And the one thing in particular is the sickness and trying to run a business with the sickness part. And it is such a big part of a small growing toddler that you forget how much it actually impacts on you, your sleep and your business. So the real drivers behind it was a kind of like, I've been through this. No one really talks about it. So let's actually highlight it. So you're aware of it. So we've got a few guys and girls here that are either pregnant or having had babies recently. One is about to go to nursery. And the first thing I said to him is, okay, you need to plan that you're probably going to be off every 2 to 3 weeks with some form of illness that's going to impact how you work. And he's a bit like, really? And I'm like, well, that is the reality of the situation. So plan for it. Like, know that that is coming, because otherwise you're going to have a big shock like I did. Mm. So it has been driven by that. And then also just presence. My mum and dad were serially hard workers. My dad used to leave the house at 5:30 every morning, never really saw him. Evenings he'd get home at 7:30. You probably, you know, pat on the head and quick cuddle, and then you're kind of up to bed. And the same with my mum. She was in quite a senior HR role, and it's the same thing, like you never saw them. So you're kind of like brought up by neighbors, after school clubs, and you know, that kind of like wraparound care. So I can't be there as much as I would like to, but it's kind of like just trying to balance things out a bit so that you are a bit more present in their lives and that you're there to kind of be the listener, do things with them at the weekends, try to make sure that you're not too exhausted. So when you are with them, you're not yawning and just trying to get rid of them as quickly as possible because you're so tired. So that's been the real motivator for me, is just to be a bit more in their lives as they grow up.
Yeah, there's so much to unpack there. As you can imagine, we are, as women of a certain age, to borrow a term, we are often talking about issues facing women in the workplace. We haven't spoken as much about men, which is why this is such a great opportunity for us to be able to talk to you about it. It's interesting because I didn't know your children were so young. Mine are 10 and 13, and obviously once you get to this stage, you've got a completely new set of issues. Yeah. And they don't sort of rely on you physically, but they do rely on you a lot more emotionally, and so that presence just becomes something different, right?
Yeah.
But first of all, I want to acknowledge the fact that you've talked about that stage of time when you're basically living with a human petri dish and you are getting
everything
possible. Yeah, everything that's going around nursery is really, really difficult, not only because you have to be present for them and home with them when they're sick, but also because you are catching everything and it's awful. And I've never actually heard it even discussed before in the workplace. Yeah. So yeah, it's an interesting lens. And I think obviously men are home more. We know that statistically because of working from home in general. So men are home more and potentially more involved in the sort of day-to-day realities of raising toddlers in a way that maybe they haven't statistically before. Mm. And so obviously that's impacting things as well. I guess my question for you is, do you feel like the same pressures exist on men they still tend to be the primary provider of the household, things like that? Do you feel like the combination of that and being home and more present in the sort of day-to-day running of the family is actually creating greater pressures, or do you think it's alleviating some, or where do you think that's falling right now?
It's difficult because I think everyone's journey is quite individual. I just know from, because my wife works full time as well, so we've got this kind of like real juggle, and we do have some help. We have a nanny that helps with kind of like after school pickups and stuff, because we just couldn't do what we want to do. But I just know that, I mean, the pressure is unbelievable. So I don't know how you could add more pressure to our world without it. I mean, we are, you know, sort of capped out in terms of pressure. So I it's difficult for me to answer whether there's more than there was before, because I don't know what it would have been like. But I just know from what my life was like before children to what it is now, that the pressure level has just increased so much that, we're both extremely tired. We're both working. We both got quite sort of high pressure jobs. So you just have to talk and communicate and just make sure that both of us are kind of okay, but also that we share if my daughter's ill or my son's ill, it's not just my wife is the one that's assumed that she will stay home. It's kind
Right.
of like now, Toby's also going to have to take a bit of time off, and I'm okay with that. And I think the majority of dads in this modern world are okay with that, unless they are stuck in a job where they have an employer that isn't. But I know, for example, at Making Moves, any new parent, we just take into consideration that they are going to be off. And it's not because they want to be, it's because they have to be, because they've got to look after the child. And that doesn't matter if they're male or female, it's just that's how we've looked at it.
I honestly think it's so progressive that you've gone and taken that step to have that chat with those people, because the curveballs that, like you say, of just the phone call, you see the phone go and you're like, right, they've got a temperature, or
Yeah.
yep, here we go
The
again,
tread.
or one
So
sneeze, or one new bit of luminous green snot, and you're like, here we go, that's it for the next 2 weeks. So having that progressive chat to help prepare people. Again, my youngest is now, he's coming up to 2 in May. I remember people were like, oh, it's so much easier having two. And I'm like, it's like running into a glass door at full speed. And I had this chat with another friend only yesterday. She's a full-time working mom, like both parents working full-time, and it's relentless, but it's how do you slow the hamster wheel down, or pop the pressure? Like, I don't really think in this crazy world that we're in, of always on social media, always on in our personal lives, full-time working careers, because we don't want to give up our careers. Why should we, men or women? How do you then alleviate that pressure and create some calm in that?
You just have to kind of like try and find those little bits of time when you can have some time together. And one big decision I made, what was it, 18 months ago, was to stop the drinking. Because what I was doing is you kind of alleviate pressure. Let's go on a night out and get absolutely smashed, the two of us. Then you wake up the next morning and you both got an incredible hangover and two children. So it just doesn't work. So we've agreed. Well, we did actually at one point we just had a babysitter, but we've now agreed with our nanny that she works a little bit late on a Wednesday night, which allows us to go and just have 2 hours to sit, enjoy a meal. That's how we met, was through food. So it's quite nice to go back and revisit some of the restaurants that we looked at when we didn't have children. But it's also to try and not talk about our children. So it's to talk about us. And I mean, it always ends up talking about our children, but we try as much as we can to kind of focus on what's going on with your career, what's going on with you. How can we kind of like make things better or alleviate some of that pressure? So,
Because by the time you've closed the bedroom door on child number two going to bed, and you're like, oh God, it can't string a sentence together. We've actually both booked a day off. We've done this twice now whilst they're in nursery, because it gives you that full time. But so hopefully there's snippets here to help people out. But I think you're right, we've got to talk about it to normalize it, because it's likely that there will be people of families with two full-time working parents.
I think this the word you mentioned, Dan, was relentless. I think that's the first thing I thought when I had a baby, right? It was like, oh my God, it just never stops. It is relentless. And then when you look at that in the context of technology and things like that keep us hooked to everything 24/7, not to mention work. The relentlessness can be a real challenge in life. We need to carve out space, which I think speaks to what you're doing, Toby, and you, Dan, in terms of taking those being purposeful and intentional about taking those bits of time out and protecting them in ways that give you a little bit of presence, to your point. So have you seen Adolescence? Have you watched it yet?
I haven't actually. I've purposely not watched it.
I
So
mean, just to give you the headlines, I think the dominant message there, apart from the message around fatherhood and the need to be really on top of what's happening with your kids, even if they're sitting in front of it, especially if they're sitting in front of a computer, and being sort of aware of what they're doing and what they're consuming and what the influences on them are. But it particularly looks at boys and maybe what boys seem to be lacking in terms of role models and real messages from society that about their value. We're obviously having this, we've had this great shift, International Women's Day, things like that, which celebrate the contributions of women. But do you feel, and maybe this is, I know this is a big question, do you feel like there isn't enough kind of positive representation or celebration around men and their particular challenges in the workplace right now? Do you think that's lacking?
Yeah, I think that they just need, they need more support. I don't know if it's a gender thing. I think just generally, young people need more support than they have now because of what happens on social media. I mean, I know I'd like to think my, you know, I've got a good support network around me, and I'm fairly strong and resilient from a mental point of view. But if I spend a weekend looking at Instagram, you can get yourself in a right hole. And that's from a, you know, 45-year-old man. So if you've got people that, you know, are struggling a little bit with mental health, or they're trying to find themselves and work out who they are and what they're doing with their lives, and then you're looking into these social media platforms and you see loads of people that are flying around in private jets and driving around in fast cars that are probably hired and not theirs, and giving this impression that everything's great, why is my life so crap? It's just not a reality, and you need people to tell them that that's not a reality and actually guide them on what they should be doing to create a good life for themselves. And I didn't really have that. And I think from, you know, just going back to boys' point of view, I think that they need that mentor. They need that kind of firm, look, mate, that's really not real. Like, if you want to be successful, you've got to work incredibly hard. You've got to show them what working hard actually is, not just telling them, it's actually showing them what that is. And that's what's missing, I think. It's kind of this amazing life on social media or wherever they're looking, compared to the reality of what actually it takes. And what I've noticed actually is, particularly with the social media awareness stuff that I've been involved in the last 3 months, it's been, I take back what I thought you needed to do to be an influencer. So I thought it was kind of like you just put up a load of pictures and, you know, you click something and someone likes all your content, and then suddenly you've got 500,000 followers and all these people coming to make sponsorship deals with you. And it's really not like that. It goes back to, it's incredibly hard work to do that, and that's your career. That's what you've decided to do. But people aren't telling, male or female, they're not being told that. They just get to see the end result. And that, I think, is a real problem, because it gives off this impression that you don't need to work hard. And whatever you do, you have to work hard.
Such a difference between being an influencer and a key person of influence. And I'm using the words of Daniel Priestley there, they're not mine. But I've been on so many of his webinars, and every time I leave enlightened, and there is this fakeness, you know, of selling charcoal toothpaste and you'd be a millionaire and you just have to put an Instagram post up. But that's not the reality of it. It's graft to be a key person of influence in your space. And that's clearly the journey that you've been on. I will come back to that in a second, if that's all right. But you know, in our discovery call, you spoke about sacrifices and adjustments that you've made, because it's obviously a lot of hard work, but sacrifices have to happen through that. Could you talk us through your experience there?
If you'd have spoken to me, I mean, if you speak to some of your ex-Peld and Rose colleagues, then they would have known me before as quite a big drinker. And I'm not afraid to say that I liked a beer. I didn't have a problem with alcohol. It was just more, that's how I socialized, was through booze. And one of the big sacrifices going, and again, coming back to role model, do I actually want to see my children see me rolling in the door at 6 o'clock in the evening after a massive lunch with a load of clients, and then I've got to pretend to be sober, and they can obviously tell there's something weird about daddy? Did I want that to reflect? And I didn't. So that was a choice I made to stop the alcohol. That's quite a big sacrifice for me. It was actually something that I would say is a sacrifice. The other big thing for me was therapy. And again, I would go back to young people role models. It's just having that conversation that it's actually okay to have a therapist. Like it doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. It's just actually giving you a space to, if you do have problems or you're dealing with something mentally that you can't process, it gives you a place to go and process that. And that can be a work thing, it can be a parent thing, it can just be a general life thing that you've got something stuck in your head and you're struggling with it. Just having that place to go and utilize therapy to allow that to come off your mind and process it and work with it has been like a revelation, actually. It's been great. And I really think that young people could benefit from therapy, and I think it should be more open. I think it should be more utilized. It's expensive if you do it privately, but if NHS or somehow it becomes part of that process, it's actually a prevention rather than a cure. And I think that's where we need to get with it.
I'm such an
So that
advocate for it, and I do believe that it's also don't always feel like you need to wait until you've got a challenge to overcome. It's actually good to go, like you say, when as a prevention element, because it can equip you for when something does happen. You know, you're almost preparing to have for how to deal with these situations. And a lot of companies now do offer that, which is great. But I think you're right. I think people are almost daunted by the cost for private, the perception of it, or NHS waiting lists. It's kind of a bit of a tricky situation.
Definitely.
On the drinking front, have you found that that has been challenging in terms of the way that you do business? I mean, has it affected your ability to meet up with clients in a way that you normally would and things like that? And what has been the impact?
Yeah, I guess the initially it's your own perception. So you think that people aren't going to want to meet with you. All your old mates were quite boozy. They're probably not going to want to sit and have a coffee with you. They just want to go out and get drunk. You know, all these kind of like perceptions go around in your head. And then after a little bit of time, I'd been on a stag do, I'd been at a wedding, I'd done all the kind of things that you associate alcohol with, and you're actually like, okay, work, Christmas party, another one. And you're kind of like, okay, I can get through these things and I don't need alcohol and I'm actually still Toby. Like I can still have a joke, I can still be me. So there has been some people that I don't see as much now because I used to meet them to go and get drunk and we don't really have anything else in common, which is weird. So I probably don't see them as much. From a client perspective, a lot of my clients actually, strangely, don't want to drink. They don't want to go out. They do drink, but they don't want to go out and party with Toby till 2 o'clock in the morning. They'd actually much prefer to have a breakfast and have a meaningful conversation about what we actually want to talk about business. So that's been a bit of a change, is just in terms of how you communicate with people. Probably the biggest one has been with the team, because a lot of our celebrations and what we used to do was around alcohol and celebrating that way. And now I'm kind of like, well, I don't really do that, so how can I celebrate with the team? So it's been good for the business because there are other people in my business that don't drink. And it means that we do a bit more of a wider variety of activities. So when we've just come back from Barcelona, we did a paella making course rather than probably a wine tasting course. So it's kind of like just opened up. Everyone loved it. It was really good fun. I really enjoyed it myself. So it's just been kind of like transitioning into trying to do things that aren't around alcohol.
It does feel like you're catching a bit of a wave here, too. It feels like there are many more non-alcoholic drink options. It feels like the medical community is waking up a little bit more to the impacts of alcohol on health, and we're seeing a lot more of that kind of information out there. And I think people who, once you get to our age and you realize we can't really mess around with this stuff for too much longer and not have it have some sort of impact on our longevity, it feels like people are kind of waking up to that a little bit earlier too. So hopefully that's made it a bit easier.
Yeah, I think it has. And also I like the availability. One of my big things was just from it's a very personal thing, but I didn't like the idea of going into a pub and having to sit there with a bottle of non-alcoholic Beck's. That was like the worst thing that could happen. But now, pretty much every pub has a non-alcoholic option on tap. I like being in a pub. That's like one of the biggest things I miss. So I can go into the pub with my Mac, sit there on my own, work, and have a pint of non-alcoholic beer. And I can go back to the office, and it's just like having a coffee. Like, and that's really helped with my journey.
I agree. I mean, I drink a lot less now than I did before, for sure. I've been really surprised that when I drink a non-alcoholic beer, how many of the boxes it ticks for me. It actually is as much about the ritual and about the taste and about sitting there and sipping something with friends as it is about the actual impact of the alcohol, way more than I would have anticipated, actually. So it's great to have that option.
Yeah. And there's little wins as well, like that can of beer, non-alcoholic beer, is like 50 calories. You go to the
That
next one and
helps.
it's like 200 calories. So I just, there's little wins. Like I wouldn't say I've lost weight, but I actually was thinking the other day I'd fear for how big I would be now if I was still drinking, because again, coming back to being a parent, trying to get to the gym, I've tried twice this week and it's just not happened because of family commitments. So just, sort of that alcohol thing just, yeah, it fills me with fear. So
Also,
yeah.
how great and valuable is sleep? Like good quality sleep is just the best thing in the world. So anything that we can remove that gets in the way of that is a good thing, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
We talked a little bit about men's mental health, and about potentially seeking therapy for everybody, and it is a beneficial thing. But we still know that, 36% of NHS referrals for mental health support are men, just 36%. And suicide remains the leading cause of death for men under 50, which every time I come across it, it surprises me. What aren't we thinking about in terms of the unique pressures on men in work right now?
I believe it's a lot around purpose. And I feel that when you get to your kind of late 30s, early 40s, you may have already had children. You may have come out of that stormy period that we spoke about earlier. You're looking at your career. Have I done what I wanted to do with my career? I'm stuck in a job. I'm not really enjoying it. I've now got commitments from a family. I've probably got a mortgage. I'm being very stereotypical here, but kind of like, standard, UK male. And it's kind of like, what am I doing with my life? And I feel that there's a pressure on men to kind of deliver on that side in terms of from their peers, from their family, that they feel like they need to deliver as an individual. And if you're not delivering, or what you believe you're not delivering on, that just adds this kind of incredible pressure on you, and that's going to impact your mental health, particularly if, again, comes back to social and comes back to what you're seeing in the wider world, that everyone's life is amazing when it's clearly not, but it's the perception of it. It just, I mean, it does. It hurts. It impacts. So I think a lot is around just kind of like what your purpose in life. And I think that drives a lot of mental health problems with men, in particular. I've got friends of various ages that are struggling at the moment with trying to work out what they want to do. They might have had a really bad experience at work and they've kind of like broken free from that, and now they're thinking about their next journey, like what's next for them. But you've also got some other people that are struggling with family. It's a tough, they can't deal with that period of 2 to 5, and you kind of have to say to them, it's going to get better, it is going to get better, but they're really, really struggling with it. And I'm not saying mum isn't struggling with it as well, but from my point of view, the man is coming to talk to me and having that conversation with me, and you can see it's really burning them. It's just not a good place to be.
Do you think there's some impact on men in terms of the definition that we still put to masculinity? So, for example, with women, we often expect them to be nurturing, we expect them to be caring, that sort of thing, and to provide that in the workplace. Whereas with men, we expect them to perform, to lead, to dominate. Do you think that that has a role to play here?
Yeah, definitely. It may be that our culture is changing, that that's not required so much, but we're still of a generation, particularly for mine, which is like if I look back at my dad, he was the provider. And it was all very much like, Toby, you've got to go out and you've got to get a job and you've got to work hard and you're the one that's going to bring in the money. You're the breadwinner. And I think a lot of people my age and maybe a little bit younger are still, that's kind of been bred into us. So that's what we know. So it's kind of like getting comfortable with, actually, it's not like that anymore. You can actually be a bit more of a dad. You can be a bit more relaxed. You can sit with the fact that your career might be not quite where you wanted it to be, but you're still earning quite good money. You're still being a really good dad. You're still providing for your family. You don't have to keep achieving. You don't have to keep pushing. Just be like comfortable and settled with where you are in your life.
But, then we have the Republicans in America right now saying we need a return to more traditional family model and that sort of thing, which I think they believe was an easier model or one that was more straightforward where everyone understood where they're supposed to be. Whereas now, because there's so much more blurring of those lines, it actually creates tensions that maybe didn't exist. I think many of us would argue that the blurring is a better thing in that we're moving towards a more equitable family environment. But of course, there are tensions that arise from that because we still have a society that puts certain emphasis on traditional masculine qualities. And people will still feel that because they grew up with those kinds of dads, because back then, that's the way it was, right?
It's exactly that. It's just, I guess we just got to continue to push against that because it's easy to fall back into it. It might seem easy, but I don't think it's really beneficial to anyone to go back that way. So, there's no way, particularly in my business, I'm going to be changing my paternity and maternity policies to reflect what is going on in the US at the moment. It's just not going to happen. So, it's just in a position where you can change things and you can try and make it more modern and more fair for everyone. And I think that's what we need to do and continue on that journey. And the majority of business owners I know, particularly in our industry, and also people I know who run businesses outside, they're all the same. Like they want to run their business, but they also want their employees to have a good life. And they personally want to be more present with their families. So if you've got that, I'm not saying everyone's like that, but there is a shift definitely with people that I've spoken to, particularly those that are in the same position as me, that they don't want to be that masculine. I'm just going to be at work from 7 till 7, and I'll, go and give my daughter a kiss on the head while she's asleep when I get home, and then I might see her for 10 minutes in the morning before I go to work. So they don't want that.
Hopefully it'll just be the norm for our kids then, whereas for us we're still feeling that friction because we're going against the grain and what we grew up with, those cultural things that happened for us. It was one of the drivers for the podcast in the first place that mid-career people, we've done 20 years in our careers and there's almost 20 years to go. What next? Are we where we thought we'd be? Work is very different now. It's weird now from what we thought it was going to be growing up. But what next? What are the opportunities? And I think you've nailed it. Finding your purpose will help you carve that out. And you've got to navigate your way through that, whether it's with therapy, whether it's with a business coach, whether it's through listening to podcasts. It's figuring that out because work
This podcast specifically,
is
to be
weird
clear.
now. Yeah, exactly. It's weird now.
But I think that's the thing as well. There is so, if you can get through the mud and you can get through these beautiful pictures of beautiful people doing amazing things all the time. If you actually look, there are like this is where social is good, is there is actually some really good topics and discussion points going on around this, but you've just got to find them. So there's so much more available now than there was even 5 years ago. So I think if you can find the websites, if you can find the groups, if you can do some research into it, use AI to help you find it. It's there, because everyone's talking about it, but you just got to cut through the mud basically, to get there.
And you're doing that really well, and you've actively found a way to do this to unlock your own personal brand. So can you tell us how you've done that? Because that will hopefully inspire others.
The key thing for me was finding your pillars. So what do you believe in that you want to talk about? And for me, that was like not only for the social media, but it's actually for you. Like, what's important in your life? Like, What do you believe in? And I guess it's just been the social media part of it. Yes, personal awareness, but also an opportunity to kind of like give your views or show to people that it's okay to talk about these things. So the dad was the key one, but also just talking about a founder's journey and what you go through. And again, it can look like it's an amazing world, but actually behind the scenes, the majority of the time, it's a very stressful journey that you go through. And part of what I wanted to speak about was just make sure you're okay with that before you start on this journey, because you're probably about to give up a nice salary, a nice benefits package, and everything else that goes being around people all the time. And you're going to go into a journey where it's probably you and one other, or you on your own, and you're going to be on your own. You're going to be sat in front of a computer with no clients. You're going to have no salary and no benefits. And all of those things are going to create a mountain of pressure on you. Are you actually ready for that? Like, do you actually want to take that journey? And I think if you're not prepared for that, and then it hits you, it's going to add so much stress, and you're probably going to regret making that decision. And it's going to make that business feel like an anchor rather than something that's actually going to make you fly in and become a better person. So they were the two kind of pillars for me. They do clash a little bit, because one thing I've said is that I'm not sure I would be able to set the business up and work as hard as I did to set my business up with my children that I have now. I'm not saying you can't do it, but for me personally, I would have found that really challenging. So it's like, okay, what's your setup? Do you have a mortgage? Do you have a hire purchase car? How many children do you have? Have you got school fees to cover? Like all these things, it's kind of like, are you prepared to put those on the line to run this business? Whereas for me, it was, I needed to sell a flat to raise some money to enable me to set the business up. But that was it. I had no other commitments. I was free. I could work as long as I wanted. I wasn't worried about money particularly, because I knew that if it all else failed, I could just go back into corporate world. So those two things were like really key for me to get over and message through social.
They're really great pieces of advice. And being really frank, when I had a call with Chloe from the Shore Group, who I mentioned earlier, when I was thinking about setting up Bluebird, but she just said to me, "When's your mortgage up for renewal?" And I was like, "What?" She went, "I'm because you need so many years of accounts. Have you thought about this?" And it's these snippets of information that if you are going on the journey, and people are, you've just got to do your research. And it's knowing those foundational principles, but then also about surrounding yourself with people, because it can be quite lonely, you know, all those things, to go and do it. It's not saying don't do it, but just do your research and knowing about those setup and the potential things that could trip you up along the way. So thank you for those sound bites. I think they'll be really inspiring for people who may just be at that juncture of what is next. And that question over to you then, what is next for Toby?
For now, it's the focus on our residential team. So we launched it in late February, and it's a passion project for me. But also, so we do see it as a great source of revenue once it's kind of up and running. That's kind of short term. And then we've just going through our 3-year strategy as a business. So putting into place what we're going to be doing over the next 3 years, which is it's opened up discussions from the business partners and myself about what do you want to do in the future. And we did a kind of exercise only last week around what's our goals, you know, what do we want to do? And I'm pleased to see that in the majority we are aligned, which was a good thing. It's just really growth of the business. We can see that we still have quite a way to go in terms of market share. So we're quite keen to continue to grow that business and just see where we get to in, say, three to 5 years' time. Long term for me, I don't think I'll be finding offices and running as a CEO forever. My long-term dream, which I spoke to Dan about the other week, which was to own a cheese shop, which is so different to what I do now, but there are reasons for it. It's kind of like I love cheese to start with, but also it's kind of a little passion project, and it would take me away totally from the world that I'm in now. I would never kind of see myself running another property company. If I was going to change or move away from what I do today, it would be to do something that's about a passion project, something that I would enjoy. But this is the problem with an entrepreneurial brain. You then go, okay, so if I had one cheese shop, could I open five other cheese shops all around East London? And where would I get the cash from? How would I raise it? Could I make it global? Could I sell it? So it's kind of like, I'm hoping that my anchors will stop me just from having one cheese shop, but who knows where it'll go. So
maybe it's cheese and non-alcoholic wine is your brand position.
Yeah, there you go. So yeah.
The opportunity. I mean, I want to know what your favourite cheese is before we finish. We've got to, right?
So my family are from near, we grew up near Stilton. So I have to say Stilton because it's the local cheese. But yeah, a good bit of creamy Stilton. Can't be beaten.
Where can people reach you if they want to find you?
Yeah, so LinkedIn is at Tobias Crosby. Really simple. I don't actually do Instagram, so it's only if somebody sends me a funny cat meme do I look at Instagram. But the main place is LinkedIn.
Fantastic! Thank you so much, Toby. This has been a really interesting conversation.
No, thank you both. It's been really good. I've enjoyed it.
And thank you to everyone for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have any Work is Weird moments to share, please find us on LinkedIn and let us know what they were. In the meantime, have a wonderfully weird week, and we look forward to seeing you next time.